This episode of Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast is brought to you by my ebook, Top 10 Foods for a Super Healthy Lymphatic System. Just go to healyounaturally.com/ebook to order it now. That is healyounaturally.com/ebook. Welcome to the Heal Your Naturally Wellness Podcast, a podcast about preventing, reversing, and treating health conditions by addressing the root cause. I am your host, Astrid. Join me here every 2 weeks when I interview interesting people such as coaches, holistic or functional medicine doctors, and educators from all different backgrounds about their own journeys while helping their clients achieve optimal health. In today's episode number 28, we will be discussing why your adrenals may need urgent intervention, recognizing burnout, self-care, and managing stress, plus treating HPV naturally. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hey, everyone. Today, I have a phenomenal guest. Her name is Dr. Donnie Wilson, a naturopathic doctor, certified professional midwife, and certified nutrition specialist, graduated from Vassar University in 2000. Dr. Donnie believes it is possible to be healthy even when we are stressed. She experienced severe migraines for 25 years and was determined to find a way to resolve them. In the process of solving her migraines, Dr. Donnie developed her stress recovery protocol, which identifies how stress uniquely affects each individual and then uses epigenetics to reoptimize health. She helps patients reverse challenging health conditions, including fatigue, anxiety, autoimmune disease, fertility, and recurrent miscarriages, MTHFR, insomnia, as well as HPV and abnormal pap smears. Dr. Donnie is frequently called upon to discuss her approach in the media, as well as at both public and professional events. She writes a blog you can find at drdonnie.com, and her podcast is called How Humans Heal. Welcome to the Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast, Dr. Donnie.
I'm so excited to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So as usual, we're just going to go jump right in. And I just wanted you to tell us briefly, how did your journey start as a naturopathic doctor, professional midwife, and clinical nutritionist?
Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a pharmacy. My father's a pharmacist. And so the most consistent thing in my childhood was the pharmacy, because he ran a chain of pharmacies, actually 1,200 of them.
Oh, wow.
And so a lot of people would think if I grew up in a pharmacy that I would have continued in that direction. And that was the path I was on originally. I did I have a bachelor's in science and a bachelor's in nutrition. And I was on the path to going to pharmacy school when I really started thinking to myself, I want to be able to offer people help with their health using nutrition. And I stopped myself. I on the first day of pharmacy school, I said, I'm not going. And I instead went to naturopathic medical school in Seattle, Washington, called Bastyr University. And so it was really a life-changing decision. At that moment, it was both scary and exciting to realize that what I really wanted to do, what I really felt passionate about. And it turns out, as I looked back on my childhood, that even though my father's a pharmacist, he really spent a lot of time talking about how we can change our diet and take nutrients and do things, activities in our daily life that could prevent the need for medications or be able to decrease the need for medications. And so that's what I ended up taking away from that experience growing up with my father was, hey, I want to help people to do that, to feel empowered to be able to make a difference in their health using nutrition and diet and so on. And so after going to naturopathic medical school and during naturopathic medical school, I trained as a midwife. I was very inspired about women's health. And so I did training as most of those were home births. attending home births, both in the Seattle area and the Philippines. And then I, this, when I finished was 20 years ago. So now it's 20 years later and I still practice. I see patients, every week, from where I live, in New York, although I really get the, you know, I get to see patients around the world because I can do video and phone support. So it doesn't matter where we're located. And I've been doing virtual practice for over 15 years. So just because of the pandemic, but this has been something that I've been doing is helping patients. And it, as those things you mentioned, I tend to focus on health issues where people have really feel like they hit a wall. You know, they're like, they just feel like they hit a dead end in the medical system. And they're like, I know there's got to be something else possible. What else can I do? And that's when they end up calling me.
Wow, that's awesome. Really nice background you have. And I think it's very fulfilling, right? When you're doing something that you love and you know that you're actually helping people. And it's interesting to know that even though your father was a pharmacist, he still applied some of the holistic, you know, side of it. So that's pretty interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us. Now we're going to just jump into the first question. So why don't you, let's talk about how you had a post on your Instagram and it said every part of the body talks with every other part of the body. So let's talk about how our bodies are a set of interlocking systems, as you put it really well, and how all of this affects our response to stress.
Well, and I think that, you know, so much of the time when people experience the medical system, it's as if our body is in many parts, right? You go to this doctor for your digestion and that doctor for your joints and this other doctor for the gynecology or urology. And you, it feels like everything is separate, but really, I think we have an intuitive knowledge that that's not true. We experience our bodies as a whole. Absolutely. And what I find is that whenever patients come to me and they all sometimes feel like they have all these different things going on, they're like, oh, I have a rash and I have a stomach ache and I have anxiety. And they'll say like, why are all these different things happening? And what I really try to help them understand is that because you're one body, these symptoms are all interrelated. And so really, it's not a bunch of different things going on. It's one thing going on, but showing up in multiple places. And when we can change our perspective on our health issues that way, to realize, to look for the common denominator, so to speak, you know, why is it that the skin and the digestion and the brain are all showing symptoms at the same time? And that's what I do. I start asking that question. Why? What is it that's causing those interconnected systems to all signal to you at once that they need attention? Because when we think of it that way, then we can solve it. Then we can go, oh, this, because maybe it's one single issue that needs to be addressed. And it solves all of these symptoms because ultimately you're an interconnected system in your body and your body, they're all talking to each other.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We talk about that a lot in the holistic industry. You know, you treat the body as a whole, you know, it's not just one thing, you know, separately. Unfortunately, allopathic medicine, it's a little bit behind in that aspect. So you explained it very well. Thank you so much. Now, let's talk about burnout. Why is it important to recognize it? And what are the steps to overcome it? Like you had a really nice post video actually on that. And so I really wanted to talk about that a little bit.
And burnout, I mean, I think it's a term that we can kind of all relate to, you know, when you're feeling run down, worn out, stressed out, you know, when maybe some of these same symptoms I mentioned, you know, anxiety, fatigue, maybe your sleep is off track, maybe your you start to get all these different symptoms in a snowball effect. So they're just growing and growing. You're like, what the heck? And you feel like you just need a take a break from life, you know, that's this concept of burnout. The thing is that it can kind of sneak up on us because we're kind of taught that we're supposed to be invincible. You know, we're supposed to be able to just like power through and, be superhuman and not be affected by stress and just, you know, that we think we're supposed to be able to, right? So it almost is like if you experience burnout, then you feel like you did something wrong. And I really want people to understand that it's not that you did something wrong. It's just that you're human. You know, yeah. Actually, as humans, we have a built-in stress response system that helps us, but we also, with that, have a built-in requirement for stress recovery. And if we don't get that stress recovery, eventually the stress response system is not going to be able to keep up anymore. And the burnout is really, to me, your body telling you, okay, it's time for some stress recovery. No yeah. more procrastinating. It's time.
Yeah. The body, like I always talk about this and I'm like, you know, if you don't address your health issues now, your body will hand you the bill later. You know, you invest in your health. And it is so true. Like, excuse me. Sometimes when I'm talking to friends or even some of my followers or even the podcast, it's like, you know, my doctor's patients come and they're like, I feel a certain way or I'm feeling tired. For example, I was talking to a friend recently and it's like, I feel really tired or I could just keep going and going and going. And eventually your body, if you start to like, oh, I'm so tired. I've been sleeping so much. Make no mistake that the body tells you what's going to happen next. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. and sadly, and this is a good reminder for all of us, our bodies will show, you know, disease will show up, unfortunately, in the end. Yeah. You could abuse it as much as we want. We could eat whatever we want, but eventually our bodies are going to say, it's going to show up somewhere. And sometimes it's not a good thing. So always remember that no matter what, the pain, right? Pain, emotional distress, any kind of stress, the body's trying to tell you something. And I always say, listen to your body, right? Awesome. So thank you for answering that. Now let's talk about the second brain, how stress affects the gut brain axis. And I just wanted to read a little bit of something that you, at the beginning of your article, millions of neurons run between your gut and brain. And we now understand that the digestive system has the ability to communicate with the rest of your body. You explain how your gut works, how our gut works, ways to optimize its performance and improve your overall health. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? I found that article really phenomenal. And, you know, tell us a little bit how it helps to, or you actually discussed it in your podcast. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Well, and I think the gut-brain axis is such a perfect example of this interconnectedness that we're referring to. Because again, so often we would think, oh, what's going on in my brain is separate from my body. Or for a long time, we thought that the communication was only from our brain down. But now we know that our digestion, our gut or our intestines can signal back up to our brain. And so once we realize that this is not just a one-way road, this is a two-way communication mm-hmm. from our brain to our gut constantly. So this means that, you know, this whole concept, right? Like sometimes people are kind of in medicine led to believe that something they're experiencing is all in their head. Right? Like, you know, oh, well, if your lab work is all normal, but you don't feel well, it's all in your head.
Right.
But no, I think that's not the answer. It's that it's probably due to this gut brain axis. It's that there's a communication happening within our systems that once we understand that, then again, we can solve it. I'm always looking for what are the things once we understand it, then it allows us to solve it. You know, so we know that, yes, stress, we experience stress and it signals to four core systems, actually the digestion, the hormones, the nervous system, and the immune system. But say we're talking specifically about how the stress affects the digestion, it makes it so we don't digest our food well, it causes leaky gut, it increases inflammation, it disrupts our gut bacteria. And so now we have signals from within our gut, from the inflammation, from the imbalanced gut bacteria, from the vagal nerve. When we talk about the neurons, it's this vagal nerve, the longest nerve from our brain to our gut. And these then can signal back up to the nervous system. And so it becomes a vicious cycle. Now the brain is perceiving stress from within your body. There might, there could be no stress anywhere in your environment, but there's stress coming from your digestion and it's perpetuating a stress signal. Now it just becomes this vicious cycle of creating more symptoms. And so when we can understand that, and we can, the way to break that vicious cycle is we have to heal the gut and we need to heal the stress system. We need to help get the body and the brain out of stress mode, I call it, in order to solve this.
Wow. Yeah, that is so true. You know, it makes total sense because when the microbiome, you know, and the gut is out of balance, it can show up in other ways, like you just said. What are some of the, why don't you like tell our listeners, what are some of the symptoms of that gut brain conflict? Like that there's something, for example, in the gut, like what would be some of the symptoms that they could look out for?
Well, it could be like heartburn. It could be bloating or any other kind of pain or change in bowel movements, even constipation, diarrhea. So it doesn't have to be, I mean, you could even have some, you know, issue in the gut brain axis and you might not even have any digestive symptoms. I have some patients where they say, my digestion feels fine. But when I dig deeper, I actually find that there's an issue. So it might not even create symptoms. The symptoms might only be in your nervous system. Like you might just be experiencing headaches or anxiety or sleep issues or fatigue, you know, so yes. It could be that you only have symptoms in the other areas, even though it's actually the gut brain axis that's involved.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely true. I think some of us, you know, always on a healing journey. I do, for me, when there's not a balance in the microbiome, it reflects everything with me, reflects with my sleep. I immediately, and by default, I am trying to change that. I'm supposed to be like a night owl, and that has affected many, you know, aspects of my health. And because I worked as a web developer and we used to, you know, we usually work at night better, you know, coding and all that stuff, just sitting there for hours. So anyways, thank you for answering that. That was a great answer, guys. You definitely need to stay tuned because we're going to be talking about a lot of good stuff. And now we're actually moving to just one of my favorite topics, adrenals. Who needs adrenal support the most? I saw one of your posts, really awesome, and it had a little nice graphic. And I think this is very important because I don't think this is a topic that is discussed enough.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And I really wanted to, in that post, point out that, you know, that it's at different times of our lives that sometimes the adrenals they pop up as needing more attention. Although really, I think everyone needs to be paying attention to their adrenals because the adrenal glands, which are above the kidneys down here in our lower back, that's the adrenals make our stress response hormones. The adrenals make cortisol. They make adrenaline. So we're asking a lot of them every day, all the time. But we're especially asking a lot of the adrenals when we're pregnant, postpartum, anytime there's hormonal transitions. So if even during menopause or perimenopause, but it can also happen, you know, basically any other time. You know, if you have a job, a deadline, you're moving, you have a death in the family, you have, you know, basically any of these times when we know we're under more stress and we're asking more of our body or we're not getting good sleep, like you just mentioned, you know, we know that our bodies are dealing with more unpredictability and always having to adapt and help us keep up. That's your adrenals doing that. And so I really feel like really, if you think of like an annual exam, you know, we think of, okay, I need to get an annual physical exam and blood work. I really think we should all also be doing an adrenal panel every year to really understand where is my cortisol, where is my adrenaline. These are not commonly tested in the doctor's office.
No, you're 100% right. And actually, I'm sorry to cut you off real quick. I actually experienced that. I asked my OBGYN then of 15 years. He actually helped you know, birth my son. I mean, when I had the C-section, and I said, can you please run a hormonal panel? And I said, I think this should be hormonal panels should be for us women part of the standard, you know, yearly PAPS, you know, the OBGYN, yeah. Right? And yeah. he said, I can't run a hormonal panel. And I was, what? What do you mean? I learned how to read lab work. And so, you know, somewhat, not in depth, but, and I'm like, why not? You're a gynecologist. And he's like, no, your endo would have to do it. So I go to the endo, and the endo sends me back to, so he couldn't do it either. And I was like, I don't understand. And then he said, I don't know how to interpret it. I really hope he was joking. He told me that. And I said, okay. At that point, I think it was the second or third time I'd asked for it. And I said, you know, unfortunately I need to fire you. You know, if you don't, you're working with me for me. And if you, this is what I need. I actually went to three different gynecologists. He was a male, female, it doesn't matter, but I went to three different people and they all had a similar story. And finally, one that my friend recommended ran the hormonal panel. So guys, the reason of this long story, like my stories, is for you to be a little bit aggressive. And if your first doctor says no, you go to another one until somebody runs the lab work that you need, and don't give up. Just don't give up. I wanted to find out where I was. And in fact, I found out several things, you know, my cortisol was off, my leptin had been off, and things like that. So, you know, very important to, you know, be a little bit of a detective.
Go ahead. You have to kind of be your own health advocate, and how wonderful that you're helping people to know that, you know, to know, hey, there's certain things in the medical system that are great, you know, and we can rely on, but we also need to just be aware that there's certain things that's not part of their training, you know, that unless they've done additional extra training or like as a naturopathic doctor, this is part of my training. But unless a practitioner has that extra training, they're probably not going to think about ordering cortisol levels. And even then, they might just check cortisol at one time a day. And the thing about cortisol is that it is the only hormone that should be higher in the morning and gradually decreasing through the day. So we need to actually measure it in the morning, in the middle of the day, the evening, and the bedtime, so we can see where's your cortisol at all different points in the day. It might be normal in the morning when you have your blood drawn, but it might be off at night when you're trying to go to bed. And so we actually measure that in either urine or saliva, so we can really see, hey, what is your cortisol up to? And adrenaline can also be measured. It's measured in urine.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware of that. You know, I wanted to mention something really interesting for you guys to potentially look into, and maybe you could actually give some insight. I remember this was when I started digging deeper also. And I remember, which is actually happens quite often. I don't know if it's a chronic thing but I'm usually, when everyone's so tired, I don't know if it was because of so many years working at night. So my friend actually said, you know, it's almost 10, 11 o'clock at night. I'm about to die. I'm so tired. And you're like all, you know, awake and ready to go. Like, what is going on? And that actually made me realize, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, my hormones. I've always had issues with hormones, but I'm like, maybe it's just my cortisol. Indeed, yeah. My cortisol was higher at night. Mm-hmm. So when in the mornings, and actually it was okay in the mornings, it wasn't even that low in the morning. So I wasn't experiencing super tiredness, but I'm able to sleep later if I could sometimes. So, you know, just to remember that, right? Those some of the signs of that your cortisol, so let me rephrase this better. What are the signs that your cortisol is off?
Well, definitely these similar symptoms we talk about, and it can really vary from person to person. And to some degree, it's tempting. Believe me, it's tempting for me too, to try to figure out your cortisol based on your symptoms. Like someone might think, well, if I'm really tired, does that mean my cortisol is low? And sometimes it is. Sometimes fatigue is caused by low cortisol, but it could also be that high cortisol can cause people to feel fatigued. So I caution you about guessing. Definitely better to test. But yes, it could be fatigue. It can be, like you're saying, you know, staying up, not feeling like you can go to sleep, and, you know, earlier at night. It may be that you wake up in the middle of the night or wake up too early in the morning. It may be that you feel anxious or heart racing, or, you know, even any of these other gut issues, hormone issues, immune system, frequent infections. So it's going to show in those four systems. It's going to show up in your digestion and or in your immune system with like frequent infections or allergies or autoimmunity. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to show up in the nervous system with like anxiety, depression, sleep issues, or it's going to show up in the hormones. Maybe thyroid's going to be off. Maybe menstrual cycle's going to be off. You know, something hormonal is going to be off. So when any of those four core systems get thrown off, it tells me the cortisol and or the adrenaline are off track. Now I'm just finished writing a new book, which will be out in a few months.
And I'm going to mention
it to you because it aligns with what you're just mentioning. What I do in that book is I help you to figure out your stress type, because what I've identified is that there's some five common stress types, meaning when you're under stress or you get into burnout mode, you're likely to fall into one of those five categories where that is going to be describing whether your cortisol and adrenaline are high or low. So for example, in your case, when your cortisol is high at night, I call that the night owl stress type. Mm-hmm. But other people might not be a night owl stress type. Maybe they're one of the other four. But by understanding your stress type, then you can know which nutrients and herbs to choose, because this is the thing, is we use different approaches to get the cortisol and adrenaline back on track again. So when your cortisol is too high at night, we're going to use different herbs and nutrients than a person who might have cortisol that's too high or too low in the morning.
Oh, wow. That's pretty neat. I love it. I actually never heard of that, you guys. So definitely stay tuned. We are going to talk about the book and all that good stuff at the end. And thank you for answering that. That was perfect. Now let's move on to the next question, which is obviously related to what we're talking about. What is sleep hygiene? Why is it so important, especially today when we're sleeping less these days? And what can we do to increase sleep hygiene?
Oh my gosh. So, and we're talking about how sometimes, you know, you're stressed, your cortisol and your adrenaline are high at night, and you're just like, and you have maybe, you know, projects you're trying to get done, or maybe you have kids and your kids finally go to sleep and you're like, I finally have time to do the laundry. You know, like yes. There's so many reasons why we might be up late and we're exposed to lights late. Cause, you know, here's the thing, is that when our brain is exposed to light, even if your eyes are closed, if you have light in the room, it's essentially telling your brain to wake up. It's going to turn down the melatonin and turn up the cortisol. So in terms of sleep hygiene, what we want to do is start to really think about giving our brain and our body the right signals to indicate that it's time to sleep. You know, our bodies are constantly perceiving around us, right? So if there's a lot of noise and light and activity, our brain's going to think it's time to be awake, right? So if we want to be sleeping, we need to be like, okay, let's turn down the lights. Let's be quiet, do some maybe meditation or mindfulness, you know, get ready for bed, maybe take a bath. I mean, sometimes people are turning toward, you know, say alcohol, for example, of like, oh, I'm going to relax my brain and drink alcohol. But actually, the studies show that the alcohol can actually work against you with your sleep. So you better to choose these other more calming activities. Or if you really do have an issue with high cortisol, like you were mentioning, then let's use herbs and nutrients to help correct that, so that we can get your body out of that mode and back into, you know, a healthier version of being able to get to sleep and stay asleep.
That's actually a very good point. And on that note, what are some of the herbs or nutrients that you would recommend, for example, with someone with cortisol levels at night? I do like to take a bath, Epsom salt, and I recently found, I was actually sent a sample from one of my awesome merchants, Good State. a transdermal magnesium.
Yes.
And so I put a, right? I put a little, you know, you could actually have a foot soak or you could put it in the bath. I actually add my Epsom salts, a little bit of lavender essential oils, warm water. And I actually have been ending it with a very cold shower. And I actually end my showers with cold showers now. So what are some of the herbs besides those little, I mentioned that because that's something that you could do to kind of like help you unwind. I try to put the phone down, except when I need to do a reel so I could show them, I can show my users. I'm like, you know, I'm relaxing, but I'm like, listen, self-care, because you got to walk the talk, right? So self-care, look at my bath, just my feet. This is what I use. Peace out. Put the phone over there, far away, go back and relax.
Then you're gonna relax. Believe me, I do the same thing. And I mean, you're in line with magnesium. I mean, not only does magnesium relax our muscles and our nervous system, it's very relaxing, but it also helps metabolize or process adrenaline. So it gets the adrenaline out of our system.
And oh, that's great to know.
Magnesium is, you can, like you're saying, use it transdermally. You can get it right through your skin, but you could also take magnesium oral. Now, some magnesiums are more, they're more effective in the digestion. So we use them for constipation, like Meg citrate, for example, is better for constipation. But for this relaxing and getting rid of adrenaline, I would use like magnesium glycinate or magnesium threonate, which are very calming to the nervous system. And then, yes, there are herbs. There's herbs like you mentioned lavender in terms of like an essential oil, but you can also get herbs like classic would be valerian, passion flower, skull cap. These are all herbs that have a calming effect on our nervous system, and they are not addictive or anything like that. They don't tend to have side effects. So it's very gently calming that you could get in a tea or capsules. And, you know, chamomile tea, for example, is a classic herb for calming the nervous system. So it's that concept. And then what I like to do is also, like in terms of cortisol, we want to use, say, the herb ashwagandha. Is an urn. Magnolia root is another that helps decrease cortisol at night.
Oh, wow.
And so you can use, ashwagandha or ashwagandha with magnolia root to calm down the cortisol.
Oh, because I use ashwagandha in my smoothies occasionally. So I have the ashwagandha powder.
Put it at your nighttime.
Oh, wow. So you could add the powder to your tea per se. You know, guys, just so you know, there is a couple of, you know, what is it? Traditional medicinals has actually a tea that is called Nighty Night, and it has all of these herbs that Dr. Donnie mentioned. Do you happen to have any, I know that you have some of the product, some product I believe you developed, anything in your store that my listeners could potentially...
Yeah, there's a product called Sleep Support, and it has these herbs and nutrients as well as that one also has some melatonin and 5-HTP. See, 5-HTP is an amino acid that converts to serotonin, and serotonin is a calming neurotransmitter. So if we want to calm the nervous system, then we can support serotonin with the precursor nutrient, 5-HTP. And then there's also... GABA. GABA is a calming neurotransmitter. So we're supporting the calming part of the nervous system with nutrients as well as herbs. And so then you get that, you know, they can work together. This is the cool thing is a lot of times herbs and nutrients are synergistic.
Yes.
So some people think, well, is it too many things to take at once? And for some people, it's important to do one thing at a time. But for a lot of people, when you combine the nutrients and herbs together, you get this synergistic effect that's even more beneficial than the taking these things individually. There's also a product under my supplement line is called Nature Empowered. And there's another product called Stress Support. And the Stress Support contains some of these, you know, along these same idea of herbs and nutrients that help to decrease the adrenaline and decrease the cortisol. When you know that, you know, that your cortisol and adrenaline are probably high and you just want to turn off that stress response, you just need a break. You're just, because what happens is when we're constantly under stress, it's like the body gets stuck in a stress response and it can't turn it off. So you might be thinking, oh, I'm going to take a bath and go to bed, but your body still thinks it's supposed to be stressing. And so we need to really give strong signals to tell our brain and our body, no, I'm done with the stress for today. Time to turn it off. And so you can do your bath, you can do nice calming music, all of those things. But you might find you want to add some herbs and nutrients that just also really signal to the stress system, hey, let's turn off the stress now. Let's go to sleep now.
Wow, that's a really good point. I never thought about it, even though I do these things, you know, with the herbal teas and things like that. And, you know, it's important, guys, to recognize this. You know, we need extra help, especially today. Mm-hmm. I think we underestimate the issue with the cell phones. I am guilty myself. I'm not going to lie. You know, like we go with the phone, and you know, I get noticed. There's some notifications that are extremely important. For example, or, you know, you could relate. You know, for example, for your patients, for me, it's like my website. Is it down? Things like that can really wait, right? But it's always reading. I started reading, going back to my books. I also have a little. Where's my phone? I wanted to show, I don't know if you guys could see it. I just got this as a gift. It's a little EMF deflector type of thing that I got. I don't know how powerful it is, but I think it helps. Anything that you could do, blue light blockers, as we always talk about, but the main, I have also on the phone, I have the setting of, you know, a night or blue, what is it called? The blue light blocker or whatever. And so anything that you could do to help your body de-stress at the end of the night and, you know, just calm it down, things like that. Awesome. Thank you for answering that. We're going to move to pretty much two completely different topics that I found interesting on your, excuse me, Instagram account. What is cervical dysplasia and what are ways to treat this condition holistically or naturally?
Mm-hmm. So cervical dysplasia is when, you know, when we go for a pap smear, you go in for your annual exam with the gynecologist and they do the pap smear. If they find abnormal cells on the cervix, it's called cervical dysplasia. And the thing with cervical dysplasia is it's really a spectrum of abnormality. What we're picking up on is the cells way before they turn into cancer cells. So in some ways, how great it is that we can pick up on these cells being even slightly abnormal before they turn into cancer cells, because that means we can do something about it before it becomes cancer on the cervix. And the thing is that what we know is that most cervical cancer cells are caused by a virus, the HPV virus. Mm. And I talk about the HPV virus as if it's one thing, and really there's over 100 different types of HPV virus.
Strains, right?
And also it's important to know that most all of us have been exposed to the HPV virus. It's something like 90% of us have HPV at some point in our lives. So it's not a rare virus. And I like to clarify that because a lot of times when women get their pap back and it shows positive HPV, they could feel not only scared that it might cause cancer, but also ashamed. Like there's a lot of shame around it, feeling like,
oh yeah,
what did I do? I don't want anyone to know. And feeling really hard on yourself about it. And I really like to encourage women to know that it's actually quite a common virus. And what we know is that for the most cases, most of the time, we can fend off that virus and it doesn't cause cancer. It's only 10% of the time that it can cause these abnormal cells or cervical dysplasia. And so to me, the question becomes, again, what's putting you in that 10%? What is it about your body that's making you susceptible to this virus where it's allowing the virus to cause the abnormal cells on the cervix? And it really comes back to stress of various types. HPV virus loves it when we're stressed, essentially, whether it's psycho-emotional stress, physical stress, if there's other signs of stress in your body. now this, your immune system is not as able to protect you from the virus, and then the virus can cause the abnormal cells. And so I'm hearing from a lot more women, of course, it's been such a stressful year for everyone. I'm hearing from more and more women who are getting their PAPs back with a positive HPV and abnormal cells, because I think this stress is really making us susceptible. And so that's what I help women to do, is to understand that, but also to know that we can then fend off this virus, just like we do other viruses, by supporting our immune system. And we can actually help the body to heal the cervix, to grow new healthy cells on the cervix, and to prevent this from happening again in the future. And this is not something that you'll hear at the gynecologist's office. So I'm really trying to raise awareness for this, because so many women are suffering from the fear and anxiety around this situation.
Wow. Yeah. And I'm glad that we're talking about it now. You know, my listeners are going to have a chance to follow you and learn more about it. If you are dealing with HPV, you know, human papillomavirus, it's more common than we expected. I remember reading statistics, 75% of college students had it. This was in the early 2000s. Do you know where we're at with those statistics? So that you mentioned 90% of us have had it
at some point. I mean, it's basically, like, even if you think of it as even one out of every two people at any moment in time, but they say that all of us in our lifetime will have had it, most all of us. So it's a very, we become exposed to it through sexual activity. And, you know, so if someone feels ashamed of their sexual activity, then they might feel ashamed of this HPV. But in actuality, it's so common that even women who only had one sexual partner could have HPV. And the thing about it, too, is that it can stay in your system for years. So you might have been exposed to HPV when you were 20 and it didn't show up. Like, it doesn't show up in the test right away. And then only when you're stressed in your 30s, all of a sudden it shows up and you're thinking, was I just exposed? But it could have been you were exposed 10 years before and it only just activated. So it's a very, it's something that's so sneaky. We don't always know it's there. And there is no test for men. Men also have HPV, but they don't have a pap smear. There's no way to test them.
Right. So I was just going to say that, like, there is no test. So they're the carriers. And unless they have the physical signs of one of the strains, which is general warts, and your women have to really, you know, before you go in and be intimate with someone, definitely observe, turn the lights on. I know that a lot of women are, you know, they feel a little bit, you know, weird with the lights on and stuff like that. Turn the lights on, check what you're going to be dealing with and look for signs. But if there are no physical signs like words, what do you look for?
That's a good clarification, because it's, as I mentioned, there's hundreds of different types of HPV. So some types cause warts, but not all of them do. And the types that cause genital warts don't usually cause cancer.
Cancer, right.
So there's a lot of times we're in an unknown situation, you know, like, you know, you only way you would know is if you had a pap and it came back positive. But women also could be carriers. You could have HPV and it's not showing positive on your pap and you just don't realize it. So it's one of these where I think it's less about being afraid of being exposed to it. You know, I think I would just suggest, like, figuring, hey, very likely we're all going to get exposed to it. And of course, you're going to choose carefully with sexual partners anyway, but you might still get exposed to this virus. It's more about helping your body be as healthy as can be. Because when you've addressed these things we talked about, like when we're addressing burnout and we're getting good sleep and we're, you know, managing our cortisol and adrenaline, you're decreasing the likelihood of this virus being able to activate and cause issues. So it's really a matter of becoming empowered about your health in order to prevent this virus from being a problem.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. That's always the case. You know, try to stay as healthy as possible. And, you know, as we now learn, it could be dormant. And one of the best ways to address any virus, in fact, I believe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is to, you know, boost our immune system. So, you know, your immune system is going to fight any virus, you know, no matter what. So that's what you want to do. The same thing with a lot of diseases. You know, this was, I learned this from one of, I forget which doctor that I follow. One of the scientists too, I think is Dr. Gonzalez, I believe. And he says, you know, the only thing that actually gets rid of cancer or helps fight cancer is your immune system. Yeah. Nothing else. This, he is, I think, Hope for Cancer. He's the director of Hope for Cancer in Mexico. And I never forget that, you know, he said the only thing, he's also a scientist, he developed these products as well. And he said that. So it's good to remember. Awesome. Do we have time for one last question, Dr. Donnie?
Sure.
Okay, awesome. And this will be the last one, I promise. So I also found one of your posts, at least 90% of us have had EBV virus, and that is the Epstein-Barr virus. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
So this is another virus. Epstein-Barr virus is what we know of as the monovirus. And again, most all of us are exposed to Epstein-Barr virus most often when we're in our teen years, you know, when we're teenagers. And some people experience symptoms, like some people really get sick when they get Epstein-Barr virus, like they're out of school, they're in fatigue, they have swollen lymph nodes and sore throat and sometimes swollen spleen, and they can have a lot of symptoms at that time. But other people who at the time we get exposed to Epstein-Barr virus might not have any symptoms. You might not even be like, oh, I didn't even know I had it. But what can happen is, and this is, it's similar in some ways to HPV, human papillomavirus, which is that later in life, when we're under a lot of stress, right, and we're experiencing burnout, then the immune system is down and it makes us susceptible to Epstein-Barr virus reactivating again. And so this virus can become active later in life and again cause symptoms of fatigue, is a very common symptom. And it can also be involved in triggering autoimmunity and also different cancers. So it's important to recognize, because it's not commonly tested for by the in the regular blood work or regular doctor's office. And some of the tests that are done would just tell you that you were previously exposed. You know, so it's just saying your immune system recognizes this virus. There's a very specific test called the early antigen that tells us whether it's currently active. So if you're experiencing a lot of fatigue, and, you know, of course, you're going to check for anemia and low thyroid function and other causes of fatigue. But another consideration would be, did the Epstein-Barr virus become active? Now, that can be part of the picture, right? Like sometimes it's tempting to put all the blame on one thing, right? Like, oh, I'm going to put all the blame on Epstein-Barr, or I'm going to put all the blame on some other thing that is happening in your body. To me, it's better to look at it as what led you to be susceptible to Epstein-Barr virus at this point in time, because when we can address that, we can address your susceptibility, which is likely related to your cortisol levels, adrenaline levels, the gut-brain axis, you know, and the gut, the digestive health. These things leave you vulnerable for something like Epstein-Barr virus to turn on and join the party, so to speak.
Wow, that's phenomenal. So you guys, you heard the particular test that you could have your doctor run. But if you, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's tough to get your doctors to run your lab work for X or Y reason, look for another one. But if not, you know, my guests and my podcast are all naturopathic functional medicine doctors. You could go, obviously, I'm going to mention where to follow them and you could work with them. Dr. Donnie also does virtual consultations. She's in New York. If you're in New York, I'm in New York. I didn't know that. I may become a patient. I would love that. So, you know, definitely stay tuned and follow us. So this basically concludes the podcast. But before I leave, I want to let you know that you could connect with Dr. Donnie on her website, Dr. Donnie, that is the word spelled Dr. D-O-N-I.com. The links are going to be in her dedicated page on my website. So you don't have to worry about where to find her. All the links are going to be there. And also my YouTube channel. You could follow her on her Instagram at Instagram.com, Dr. Donnie Wilson. And you could also join her in her Facebook group. I know that Dr. Donnie is running a challenge, I believe, right now. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. I have a 7-day stress reset. Okay. So what happens is the key to, no matter your stress type, so no matter how your cortisol and adrenaline is out of balance, what really helps us to get on the path to recovering from stress is self-care. And I use the acronym CARE to emphasize clean eating, adequate sleep, reducing stress activities, and exercise. And so in this 7-day stress reset, I teach you how to implement CARE activities into your day-to-day routine basically it's this concept of using small incremental steps to add up to big changes. And so, because it can be tough at first and overwhelming to feel like you got to make all these changes at once. So we want to be making little changes day by day. And so in the 7-day stress reset, that's what we do. And I offer this 7-day stress reset. You can do it on your own anytime, but every so often I do a live version where I join you live and we do, you know, we get to do it as a live group.
Oh, that is awesome. What is the name of your group so you could go follow you on Facebook?
Oh yes. It's called the Stress Warrior Facebook group. It's I think Stress Warrior Stress Resiliency, but if you just look for Stress Warrior, which is the name of one of my books also, Stress Warrior.
Warrior. Okay.
But, the Stress Warrior Facebook group, you can join me, and I do trainings every week as well on these things we're talking about and how to just really, you know, listen to your body and understand what your body needs to stay healthy.
Beautiful. Well, that's awesome, guys. You know where to find Dr. Donnie, Instagram, Facebook, and her website. Her book is coming up. What is the name of your book coming up again?
The new book is Master Your Stress, Reset Your Health.
Beautiful. So when the book comes out, I will put a link on her dedicated page on my website so you could find it. Dr. Donnie, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you. I learned so much as usual, and I would love to have you again. And anything else you want to end the podcast with for our listeners?
I think this has been so thorough to talk to you. Thank you so much for the way you dive deep into these topics and yet make them really accessible for people to feel motivated. I mean, that's my message is that it's possible to recover from stress. We just need to just take a minute and recenter and think about what's going on in your body that needs attention. And then we can take steps to solve it. So yes, if I can help you at all, please reach out.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for the kind words and thank you for being here. It was an absolute pleasure to have you. We learned so much and looking forward to having you again.
Okay, take care.
You too. Thank you so much.